Welcome to Hyperlocal, a podcast dedicated to inspiring economic developers, job creators, and community champions. I'm your host, Mason Ainsworth, and our mission is to bring you real-world stories, proven strategies, and game-changing projects using local solutions and global perspectives. We have had incredible guests on the show, and we're just warming up. Nathan Oley is leading global economic development conversations. As president and CEO of the International Economic Development Council, the world's largest association of economic developers, he's steering the organization into its historic 100th year with vision, collaboration, and bold ideas. Nathan's career has been defined by building bridges, driving recovery, and putting people first. Now at the International Economic Development Council, he's championing the next generation of leaders, expanding the Economic Recovery Corps, and leading the charge from competition to true collaboration. In this milestone episode, we dive into their 100th year anniversary and what it means for the global economic development community, the state of the field survey and how success is measured in economic development, moving from competition to collaboration, and how Nathan has actually met with 525 organizations in 2025 alone. The importance of showing up at other tables, giving back, and connecting across sectors. Advice for the next generation of economic developers and the Emerging Leaders Affinity Group, as well as much more. Now, let's get into it. Nathan, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today on Hyperlocal.
Excited to be here with you, Mason. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's not every day that you get to interview somebody who is the head of the largest economic developer association in the world. I think that's pretty exciting, and I know that's definitely a first for me, so really happy to have you on the show.
Well, always happy to participate in conversations like this, and appreciate all that you're doing to move these conversations forward as well.
I really appreciate that. It's been a lot of fun, and I know I've definitely learned some things along the way. And the intention for me is that folks, pick up something, whether it's how to help their community a bit more, or even some relationship advice. I know we had a couple episodes where we mentioned some things like that, so we can kind of go all over the place. But I will try to keep us on track today. But the first thing I usually chat about with folks is more along their origin story, you know, kind of what's been going on in their life. And I know you've done a lot of interesting things. I know at one point in your career, you were a community relations intern for the Detroit Pistons, as well as a senior advisor for the U.S. Department of Commerce for the Economic Development Administration. And now, as previously mentioned, the president and CEO of the International Economic Development Council. I'm curious, through this process and over that time, you know, what sparked your passion for economic development, and how did this journey lead you to where you are today?
Yeah, it's been quite a journey, there's no doubt. And you mentioned the Pistons. I interned with the Pistons when I was in college and thought I was going into the professional sports industry. In fact, I had a job offer with the then St. Louis Rams, now the Los Angeles Rams, my senior year of college. And, you know, my career journey took a shift mainly based on a couple of different things. One, I would go back during college in the summers and work at a family center. So not a community center, a family center. Folks all the way from infants all the way to the elderly, and making sure that families had the services they needed to be successful in life. And so it was in a very small community outside of my hometown called the West Midland Family Center. And I worked with really young kids, so basically pre-K to second grade in the summers. And after my junior year of going back for three summers, I also interned at the same time with the Pistons. I'd go to Detroit several days a week and then be in Midland several days a week that junior year summer. And I decided I needed to have some connection back to kids. And so going into my senior year in college, I was a business management major. I added a second degree my senior year. So while all my friends were taking 12 credits, I was taking 21, 22, trying to finish up. And this degree was called Family Community Services, which is similar to social work. And my senior year, I was required to get an internship. And I had done all the basic things. I'd done family programming. I had done grant writing. I had done a whole host of things at the community level. And so I went to my advisor and said, I want to understand how policy is made and how it effectuates the, changes in the programs that we're actually implementing. No one in my degree program had done anything like that. And so my advisor said, if you can find a place to do this, I'll support you in it. And I got really lucky and found an internship and then Governor Jennifer Granholm's office and spent the last semester, both in school and in the governor's office and fell in love with not politics, because politics was never a part of my life, but the policy environment and most importantly, the leadership qualities I saw in the governor. And with about a month left before I graduated, an opportunity came up in her office. I put my name in the hat, watched 30 people walk in the door to interview for it. And 2 weeks before I graduated, got offered a job. And so I called the Rams and I said, I'm sorry, I can't come to St. Louis. I've got to take this opportunity. And so I worked as what's called advance for the governor. So out ahead of any time she was out on the road, I was working with the media, I was working with the event organizers, I was working with her security team to make sure that she was prepped and had everything she needed before she got on the ground. And then I would brief her, and then I would essentially be with her through the event. And it was my job to both make sure she connected with the right people, but also got out of that event on time. And if you've ever been around a governor, it's incredibly hard to get them in and out of events in a timely fashion. And so I had this really unique opportunity to be in rooms with people across the spectrum, political leaders, government leaders, business leaders. Eventually became a trip director, traveling with every day, and was loving the work and loving the opportunity. And my wife got pregnant with our first daughter, and it wasn't going to work for me to continue to do that work where I was gone 18 to 20 hours a day, the schedule changed the night before, and still be able to see my daughter. And so I went to the governor at the time. I said, I want to stay engaged. I love what I'm doing, but I can't do this anymore. Where can I be most helpful? And she said, we need good people in economic development. And I said, that's great. I know nothing about economic development, but I'm happy to help. And so I ended up going over to the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. It's a quasi-state government agency, so it's a state level of economic development right in the heart of the recession. So 2007 is when I started. And the recession was both the best and worst time to be doing economic development work. The worst, easily understandable. We were hemorrhaging jobs, businesses were closing, communities were being really severely impacted. But it was also the best time because you had to think differently about the approaches that you were using, especially in a state like Michigan, where you have everything from a big city like Detroit to really tiny communities in the Upper Peninsula. And putting together opportunities and resources and funding programs for communities of all sizes in a state like that, in the heart of the recession, really gave me a deep lens into not only what economic development was, but where it was headed and the new kind of innovative approaches that would be needed for communities of all sizes to grow and thrive. I then got the unique opportunity. I worked at in the nonprofit sector in Michigan for a couple of years and then got recruited out to Washington, D.C., where I worked at the federal level at the U.S. Economic Development Administration, doing all the policy and external affairs for the agency itself, working across other federal agencies and with the White House. So I got to serve at the state level and the federal level. And then I took an opportunity to run the Rural Community Assistance Partnership, which is a national network of nonprofit partners working exclusively in rural communities. And again, not just economic development and entrepreneurship work, but also things like access to safe drinking water, sanitary wastewater disposal, broadband accessibility, housing issues, a real holistic understanding of the complex challenges and opportunities that exist in rural places, and loved every minute of it. We did some incredible work, and that organization is still doing incredible work to this day. And then my predecessor here at IEDC, Jeff Finkel, announced his retirement. And IEDC has always been a part of my career. Economic development obviously has been the center of my career. And the opportunity to potentially lead the profession in the field was something I just had to put my name in the hat for. And luckily enough for me, I've had this opportunity to come in and lead this organization to its next chapter. Been here about 4 years. And it's, to me, economic development is still the greatest profession in the world. And so getting the chance to lead this organization and really lead the field and profession and think about the future of the profession has been really both impactful for me, but also a huge opportunity.
Very cool. That's really commendable. I like especially
Like
how you
especially.
explained in regards to your daughter and how you wanted to be around for her. I think that family first approach is so important, especially as a father, as we've got a 1-year-old, and so that's something that's paramount in
Congratulations.
my mind. Yeah, thank you so much. Really appreciate that. So family is really important, and I like how you explained the different areas you've been involved with and really that holistic story of when you were involved with the family center and thinking about
community services and helping children and seniors as well, and taking that of, hey, well, how can we actually help these people in the future, especially through government, and that kind of leading you into the policy sector and wanting to understand, how these things work and what's the best way to go about doing them. And then the going to the governor's office and especially like advancement. I did a bit with that with a minister before when I worked for the province, and I did legislative affairs and policy. But a lot of times, as you know, with government, they'll bring you into different positions if they need you for different things. And yeah, you're right. It is crazy to get out of a room sometimes, especially when everybody wants to speak to them. But through that, you learn so much on the job. And so you being able to take those skills and then bring them into economic development, I think is crucial because you have a really good grasp of how different things work, as well as the behind the scenes, what happens in a car ride, how people are chatting, people on the phone, like how some of these discussions and decisions sometimes get made behind the scenes that a lot of people will never ever have a window into how that works. So I think you bring a ton to the table there.
Well, it's been quite a journey for me, and you never know where your own career is going to lead to, and I've had some really unique and fun opportunities, but it's also, it's a testament to the people doing this work in communities across the globe. It's what makes this work special, the mission orientation, the service orientation of it. And I've had the opportunity both to lead organizations to work on policy and make some pretty significant change happen, but all that change is really happening at the local and community level, and that's what I'm enjoying the most about this role and this position is to be able to learn from those folks, to be on the ground and visit to see what's happening at the community level, and it is a job where you can visibly see the change you're helping to create for your community and region.
Amazing. I think especially being able to see that change is so important, and being on the ground, because it really, I think, keeps you motivated as well along the way. And Nathan, just jumping a little bit ahead, I know that we've mentioned the International Economic Development Council a few times. It's a pretty exciting year for you folks. I believe this is the 100th anniversary. And so I was
It
wondering if,
is.
for those who are listening, if you could tell us a little bit about the organization, who's involved, what it does, what programs it offers, and kind of going to what you said about, not just what ECDEV is, but where it's headed. And tell us a bit about where you and the council is headed in the future.
Yeah, so IEDC is the world's largest association for economic developers. For us, that means it's a pretty broad swath of people that are engaging with us. So anyone doing economic development, whether you are in the public sector, local, state, federal, provincial, in the Canadian sense, whether you're a nonprofit or NGO, whether you are a private sector company or corporation, utilities, universities, chambers of commerce, public-private partnerships, you name it, if you're doing economic development, you're probably engaging with us in some way, shape, or form. And we do that through a number of different ways. Obviously, we're a membership association. We do build out conferences across the year. We do a leadership summit based in Washington, D.C. each spring, so late February, early March, which is a focus on kind of that C-suite executive leadership level and what does it take to lead an economic development organization? How do you build the right skills for you and for your team? How do you support the organization in the right way? And then there's also, given that it's in D.C., there's a slight policy focus to that as well, to make sure that people understand, the role and the collective voice we can have as economic developers in policy conversations. We also host a big annual conference every fall, September, October. This year we'll be in New Orleans, October 25th to the 28th. This is our single biggest conference. There's about 1,700 folks from across the globe that come together, 45 different breakout sessions. We take people on tours throughout the city and regions, so they can actually see both projects that are happening in the community, but also meet with community members and community leaders who are helping to advance that work. We build a ton of connectivity into all of our conferences, so there's lots of networking and opportunities to not just meet people, build relationships. And then we also obviously are celebrating a lot of the achievements that are happening across the field through our rewards program, through different events that we host across the conferences. And then every year we host a third conference based on the needs that we're hearing from our members. So in 2025, we hosted our first ever Rural Economic Development Conference to have specific focus on how do you do economic development in rural places, to bring rural practitioners together to talk about those issues. And so we had more than 425 folks in Great Falls, Montana last year for that. This year, given our 100th anniversary, we're doing regional events, not just across the United States, but across the globe. So the first regional event is called the Centennial Series. It's actually happening tomorrow in Richmond, Virginia. But we're doing events in Brazil. We're doing events in Florida, in Texas, Ohio, probably London, definitely in Canada. To make sure that we can take a regional focus to this work and engage at a regional level in a deeper way. So we do those things to bring people together, both to create learning opportunities for them, but also to build that network for folks. We do a ton of professional development work. So we have individual courses and two different certification programs. Everything from, a basic economic development course all the way to really technical and refined courses on different economic development approaches. And then we have two different certification programs where you take a number of courses, you go through a pretty rigorous exam process to be certified as a certified economic developer or CECD. That's a certification that's been around for more than 2 decades. It's the gold standard in the field across the globe. And then we built a new certification about 4 years ago called the Entrepreneurial Development Professional, or EDP, which is a focus on entrepreneurship-led economic development. We also certify or accredit economic development organizations themselves. So we will come in and look at an organization's financials, their strategic planning process, their leadership team, their board. How do they engage in the community to make sure not only their role as an economic developer, but that they're functioning as a really high functioning organization. And so there's kind of a third party gold stamp for economic development organizations. We have a research arm to our work where we take a practitioner's lens to data analysis and make sure that we can bring about practical uses of data for economic development practitioners on the ground. We do policy and advocacy, mostly here at the federal level here in DC, but we also convene our state and provincial associations to talk about what they're doing at the state or provincial level. And then we do a ton of work around partnerships, both sometimes directly in communities and sometimes with other organizations and associations. So I'll just give you a couple examples of that. We heard pretty routinely from our members that there was a need to, this intersection between economic development and workforce development. And economic developers need to better understand the workforce system and how to engage in that. And so we built a partnership with the Association of Chamber of Commerce Executives for a new certificate program on workforce and economic development. When we built that out and launched it, it sold out within 2 days. We also built a program over the last 2.5 years called the Economic Recovery Corps, in recognition that a lot of communities need to build capacity before they can actually execute on the economic development work itself. And the goal of this is really to build long-term sustained capacity. So we created essentially a fellowship program, a 2.5 year fellowship, where we fund the fellows. So we pay for that so that these communities don't have to bear the brunt of that. These are all economically distressed places, urban, rural, indigenous across the United States, where we've embedded 65 fellows into those communities to help build long-term capacity and also to start to create a pipeline of the next generation of leaders in economic development. Those folks have been on the ground now for 2 years of their 2.5 year fellowship. They've already leveraged more than $240 million for those communities. Again, all economically distressed places that have typically had a hard time accessing federal or private sector funds. And we're building that long-term capacity. So when the fellows finish, those organizations have built that capacity and can continue to work well beyond the time that we're there. So we want to build partnerships because we know, number one, collaboration is the key to everything in economic development, but also it's key for us as an organization, as IDC, to be partnering with other organizations that have skills, expertise, knowledge that we can leverage and utilize to really continue to move the field forward. And that's really the focus for us this year. So it's our 100th anniversary, and obviously we're going to be celebrating all that's come behind us that's built to this moment for economic developers and really looking at the history and generation of economic development and how it's progressed over the years and doing a lot of storytelling to make sure that we can really highlight what's happened over the last 100 years. But also we want to be focused on what does the next 100 years of economic development look like? What are the tools and resources that practitioners are going to need? Where's the field itself headed? How do we help the next generation of leaders step into leadership opportunities and really continue to push the field forward? So that's a huge focus for us for this year. It's a huge way for us to celebrate what economic development is and expand the scope and knowledge of what economic development is beyond the profession and field itself, and also for us to really start to put a stake in the ground about where the future of the field is headed and how we get younger people more engaged in leading that effort and leading the vision behind that.
Incredible. There's so much to unpack there. I honestly I don't know where to start. You guys are doing some incredible stuff. So first of all, thank you. It's amazing to hear that, and especially in regards to the Economic Recovery Corps, what a unique idea, and something that is making a true impact in different communities. I think that's something phenomenal and something a lot of different levels of government should really take a look at, especially here in Canada, of how we can go into some of these communities that are really struggling and make a really strong impact. So, thank you for sharing that with me, as well as some of these other incredible things.
Yeah, ERC is honestly, it's something that can be replicated anywhere. And we know that the capacity in particular is a significant issue for communities big and small across the globe. And so it's been really impactful to see not only to see the results, but most importantly to be in the room with those fellows. These are all people, mid-career folks that are incredibly passionate about this type of work. And they're doing incredible work on behalf of those communities and in partnership with those communities to help them move forward. And so I'm looking forward to continuing to see those results, but also to see what the next chapter of ERC looks like and how do we continue to expand that type of work itself.
Awesome. That's phenomenal. I'm excited to see that as well. I know you've chatted a little bit about collaboration there and the importance of partnerships. I was wondering if you could share maybe a specific story of a successful collaboration that stands out in your mind, whether that's between communities or municipalities or businesses or maybe another association you folks have worked with in the past.
Yeah, it's collaboration is to me the forefront of where this field is and where it's headed. Competition has always been a part of economic development, always will be a part of economic development. But those places that have started to figure out how to collaborate, whether that is across sector, whether that's across communities where you're building a regional approach, whether that's tapping into what I would call economic development adjacent things like affordable housing conversations or water infrastructure or broadband or childcare. We know, or workforce development, we know these conversations are happening at the local level, but where economic developers can continue to convene and connect in with those organizations that are leading that work, we don't want economic developers to be leading, obviously, issues around housing, for example. We want them to be connected in, to understand how that system works and where they can support it in the right ways at the local and regional level. That's a huge focus for us, and certainly places that are figuring that out are doing a really good job. But I'll give you one example of a place that is doing that really uniquely, and that's the Louisville metro region. And I say it's unique because they are working across state lines. So you've got the Louisville metro area, and then you've got Southern Indiana just across the river from them, and they are working hand in glove with one another in partnership to build out opportunities across the region and understanding the assets in one place can benefit the assets in another place. And knowing that you can't have everything in your community, but to build a workforce, a strong workforce and a skilled workforce, to build the right economic development approaches, to build the right ecosystem for businesses to grow and flourish, and certainly for families to drive quality of life, takes a collective effort. And so they're doing some really unique things in a cross-state fashion, which again is really difficult from an economic development perspective, because from a state perspective, the state of Kentucky, state of Indiana compete with one another for jobs, and they compete with one another for economic development opportunities. So it's when I was there a few months ago, it was fun to see that collaboration and to see it happening firsthand. For us as an organization, again, everything we do is going to be done in partnership with others, because we know we have our own skills and expertise that are really valuable, but other organizations have unique skills and expertise that can bring new things to the table. So ERC is a great example of that. We're doing that in partnership with six other organizations: the National Association of Counties, the National League of Cities, the National Association of Development Organizations, the Center on Rural Innovation, the Regional Accelerator and Innovation Network, and the International City and County Managers Association. Knowing that economic development happens in different places in different ways. You might be in a county government, or you might be in an entrepreneur support organization in a rural place, or you might be in a nonprofit NGO, you might be embedded within city government. So knowing that economic development happens in different ways in different places was really important as we built the Economic Recovery Corps program, to have those with skills and expertise, understanding of county government or understanding of entrepreneur support organizations, to be at the table with us so they could help with the training aspect, but also support those smaller cohorts of folks that were embedded in those places. Again, we mentioned, or I mentioned, the partnership with the Association for Chamber of Commerce Executives is another great example for us. We're building a new partnership with the National League of Cities to help educate municipal leaders on what economic development is. Because again, if you're a mayor or a city council member, you may have heard of economic development, but you may not fully understand what it is and how it impacts your community and how you as a city council member or mayor have a role in helping drive those opportunities. And so we're building a new training program for municipal leaders in partnership with the National League of Cities. It's all those types of things where you can find unique partnerships to both amplify and accelerate your work, but also spotlight and lift up what others are doing, make a huge impact.
Incredible. I think that having an impact, and especially when it comes to education, in particular with elected officials, is something that's huge. I know now we're in 2026, so here in Ontario and Canada, we're in the year of a municipal election. So we're going to have, different mayors, different wardens, different councillors around, and making sure that they understand what actually is economic development. It is so crucial. I know here EDCO, the Economic Development Council of Ontario, they're also doing something similar. Currently creating a program to teach those elected officials. So I think that is something that's crucial, and the importance behind that. And as somebody, I served as a city councilor for 8 years, and I can tell you that as much as I'd like to think that I knew what economic development was, now that I've actually went through and taken courses and I'm doing my master's in it, that I only had a really small piece of the pie. And the picture of what economic development is so much larger. And if I would have had that knowledge, going back in time, my perspective and the way I would approach different situations would have been so much different. And I think, I was fairly effective at the time, but I think I would have even been more effective as an elected official to be able to help support my community through that knowledge. So I think you can't go wrong with learning new things, and especially when it comes to economic development.
Whether it's economic development in Australia, whether it is partnerships across South America or Southeast Asia, for us, we want to help build partnerships that can leverage the skills and expertise of those places. So economic development in Canada is different than it is here in the United States, particularly at the provincial level, where you've got different policies that effectuate funding programs, financing opportunities, etc. And so we know as a global organization that we have a pretty good sense broadly of what's happening across the globe, but we want to partner with organizations like EDCO to make sure that we can have a very specific focus on what's happening in Canada or economic development in Australia, what's happening in Australia, and how can we bring some of our tools and resources and allow them to be tailored to the needs of those places. And EDCO has been a tremendous partner of ours.
Awesome. That is good to hear. And definitely, I know a few folks from there do listen in, so I'm sure they will appreciate the shout out. I know you mentioned Australia as well as Canada and a few other places during the podcast, and so clearly you have some good global perspectives. I'm curious if there's something interesting out there that you're either observing or you're hearing from different members of the council or other associations around the world.
Well, it's definitely a fascinating time to be doing this stuff on a global level. As you know, the geopolitics of the world right now sometimes make it really difficult, and sometimes, in fact, make it easier to build those connections and opportunities. I've spent a couple different trips now throughout South and Central America as part of a program called the America's Competitive Exchange. And this is a focus on economic development and entrepreneurship, where it's essentially an exchange program twice a year, where we bring folks from across the Americas, North, South, Central America, together, about 40 to 45 at a time, and embed them in a community or in a region for a week, where they're literally on a bus in community throughout 7 straight days, and learning what's happening at the local level, and then being able to take those lessons back and apply them to their place. It's opportunities like that I think are really special because it allows local leaders to get involved internationally and learn what others are doing. I think oftentimes we get into our own silos of we know what we're doing and we know the best way to do it. But when we get a chance to get out of our own community and into another place, into another culture, and understand the approaches they're taking, there's often a ton of lessons for us to learn. And so programs like that, where you're actually bringing people from different places across the Americas, in this case, to learn alongside one another, to build their own relationships with one another, but also, take things back to their community has been really impactful. And I would say, we hope to be able to build out more of those types of programs in the future because it's so valuable to see how other places are approaching this work. What are the challenges they're facing that are similar to what we're facing, and what's different about it, and why do they take certain approaches based on those differences? That to me has been a really fun program to see. Not only, the week-long engagement, but the engagement outside of that week and how people stay engaged and how they continue to learn from one
Incredible. Sign me up. No. But in
another.
all seriousness, I think that's an incredible program. And When I think about that, immediately mind goes to, complacency is the killer of innovation. And I find we get a lot of this, old guard mentality of, especially in government, of we've been doing this for 30 years, and why would we ever try something new? But if you're able to take those folks, and it's just like if you were trying to change your habits, for example, well, if you change your location, it makes that a lot easier. So you take someone from their community where they might be, quote unquote, stuck in their ways, and then you give them this experience and you show them that, hey, other things are possible and people are doing unique and innovative things around the world. And then having the opportunity for them to bring that knowledge back to their communities, try some of those things, but then also broaden their network with other people they meet there so that they can continue that learning, not just at the event, but after that as well, I think is so strong.
It is, and it also builds relationships between and among international partners in ways that you just can't do unless you do it in person. And obviously, in today's environment where the geopolitics are complex and difficult, having that opportunity, local to local, to build those relationships and to understand and see how other people are doing this work, it oftentimes brings new, fresh ideas that you wouldn't have thought of if you just stayed in your own community or continued the work as you were doing it. And so, again, you're right. We have to continue to innovate. Part of what we're talking about in this 100th anniversary is, the future of the field and what needs to change and what tools and resources need to be built to be able to accommodate those changes and make the work as successful and impactful as possible, and ensuring that you're always innovating and willing to think outside the box and engage with others to learn from them is incredibly important to your own individual career journey, but also obviously for each community's journey.
Love that. And I love being outside the box. It can be a little lonely sometimes, but I think that's where a lot of the magic happens. And Nathan, just going off of your point about, celebrating 100 years, I know you said something a little bit earlier in the conversation in regards to, hey, it's great to look back and tell that story, but also really excited to look forward to see, what does that next 100 years look like? And I'm curious, I know that's a lot of pressure to say, what do you think is going to happen in the next 100 years? But I'm curious if you see any, whether it's trends or, use of new technology, or if you think that the industry is going to be changing or heading in a certain direction.
Yeah, so actually in 2025, in kind of preparation for this, we launched our first ever State of the Field survey to really get direct insights from the field, from the profession, to make sure we could understand what challenges and opportunities are they seeing on a day-to-day basis, and how then should we be thinking about other tools and resources we should be building as a result of that. So we had in the first year, we had more than 700 participants, more than 150,000 data points that came to be. And anyone who's interested in learning more, we've got this available as a full-fledged report, but also an interactive dashboard for our IEDC members where they can actually interact with the data, manipulate it based on what they're looking for. But a couple of key things came out of that. Number one, about 30% of the field feels like it is a field that's in transition, that there's a lot of change and upheaval happening. And I think I feel that every day in my conversations with our members and folks on the ground, because the field has shifted. You heard me talk earlier about competition versus collaboration. I think that's one of the trends that we're absolutely seeing is places that can think more regionally, build collaboration across sectors, across industries. That is the future of where the field is headed. And you're always going to have the tried and true economic development values and approaches, but there's also new innovative approaches that are happening. I think what we're starting to see as well, especially based on the data we saw from the State of the Field survey, is that there's this intersection happening between economic development and things like workforce development and infrastructure and housing. The two top things that we hear as the biggest challenges in economic development are workforce and talent and housing issues. And it's not that economic developers are going to lead either of those issues, but they have to be engaged and understand how those systems work, who are leading those efforts at the local or regional level in their place, and then how do they connect in with those folks? How do they help support that work to make sure that they've got the right workforce in place for businesses to be able to draw from? How do they make sure that there's enough, housing stock available as a business grows? How do they ensure that water access and affordability issues are tied into these conversations? How do they make sure there's childcare available? All those things are really critical to an economic developer's success. And so what we're seeing is that intersection is happening more and more at the local level, and economic developers are being pulled into conversations. So they have to understand, just like you talked about, a city council member has to understand what economic development is. An economic developer has to understand how workforce development works, or how housing is built, and the capital stacks required to make that work. And so that's we're seeing is a significant trend in the field, is that intersection between all these other pieces. The other thing I would tell you is, we've got a young generation of leaders starting to come up, and obviously a generation of current leaders that are going to retire in the next 10 years. And so thinking through how do we get that younger generation more engaged? How do we provide the right career ladders and opportunities and leadership opportunities so that, as other folks move on, we've got this pipeline of talent in place. And then even behind that kind of emerging leader sector, how do we get students and younger people aware of what economic development is? Because there's not, a specific career pathway into this work. How do we make sure people understand what this is and the really important factor that economic developers play on the ground? So I think you're starting to see trends in the way that economic development itself is done. I think you're seeing trends in the way that it's interacting with other parts of the broader ecosystem. And then I think you're starting to see a new generation of leaders who are helping to drive innovation in the field itself. And creating some space for those folks is really important to make sure that not only, do they have opportunities, but they also have a voice in what that future of the field is going to be. And the other piece to this, I think we're going to start to see an evolution around is the way that we measure success in economic development. Jobs and investment have always been the key factors, but there's a whole host of other factors that economic developers are starting to look at to understand and measure success. And some of those are, really easy to define, and some are really hard. I talk a lot about the role of an economic developer as a connector and convener, and building those relationships, building that ecosystem across your community. It's a little bit harder to measure and quantify those relationships and the systems that are being built, but they absolutely have a huge effect in the ability of an economic developer to be successful. And so I think you're also going to see the measurement tools that are associated with economic development continue to align with the field as it moves forward.
Very insightful, and I like what you said there, and kind of about the future and how do we measure success and some of the things surrounding that. I know recently I did a report, and the question was a very broad one, but it was, what is economic development? And so I looked that up, and using different definitions from around the world, and they were all very similar in my mind of kind of. And the way I explained it in the report was like, these are basically saying, hey, like, here's the tools that we do, whether it's, foreign direct investment or business retention and expansion or, many other things. But it wasn't really answering what it was for me. So I took that in the path of, for me, economic development is empowerment. And it's empowering others, whether it's empowering communities or businesses or individuals, because at the end of the day, we are not necessarily the people who are creating the jobs. We're not the ones who are, pulling up the stones in a downtown to make it safer and make it more attractive. A lot of the times, we're not the ones who are running that big cultural community event, but we're empowering other people to do that stuff. And so I think what you said about the role of a connector and a convener is so important for that empowerment of communities.
Couldn't agree more. I think that the connector convener role is so critical. And I always say to folks, not only do you have to be inviting that broad spectrum and ensuring that everyone across your community has a voice in that, so you've got to be inviting them to your table, but you also have to be showing up to other people's tables to show your support and willingness to roll up your sleeves and participate alongside them. And that to me is the most crucial factor in economic development, is building those relationships, helping to build the systems and the ecosystems across your community to allow for lots of people to be successful in their own approaches.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. I know we've had a lot of good insight here. And I know as well, we've got a lot of other folks from different leadership positions that do tune into the podcast, which is wonderful. And we've had a couple on the show, which is great. I'm curious, especially because you are leading a international, worldwide organization. Is there any advice that you have for these folks who are running other associations or councils, that you could pass on that might help them out in theirs?
I think it comes down to continuing to build relationships and do outreach. I think for me, the things that have been most successful for me in this role, but also I think for our organization, is building those relationships, whether you know what the outcome of that will be or not. So last year, for example, 2025, I did 525 different meetings with other organizations and associations. Just sometimes they're 15 minutes, sometimes they're a half hour, just trying to get to know people and build that relationship so that when there's an opportunity, you've already built a relationship. And ERC is a great example of that. Those six organizations I listed out earlier, we were able to build ERC due to a grant opportunity we were successful in. But we wouldn't have been able to do that if I wasn't able to make a phone call to each of those six organizations and their leaders and say, hey, we want to build this and we want to build it with you. We don't know what it looks like yet, but we want you to be at the table with us. And within 45 days, we had not only them signed up, but they helped us to write that grant and build out the program on paper. And it's those kinds of relationships where you can make a call and say, hey, there's an opportunity here that I think we can do together that make the most impact. And so thinking about consistently and constantly building those relationships, not only for yourself as an individual, but for your organization. And coming to the table when you have those conversations to ask, what are the priorities of that organization and how can you help support that? Because you're not always going to be able to do that. You're not always going to be able to say, oh, I can put money at the table or I can help, write a support letter for this side or the other. But understanding what that organization's priorities are and then how it might complement what you're trying to achieve is where the real gold happens because you find opportunities that you never thought about to support another organization, to build that relationship, and eventually, usually leads to some type of partnership that eventually is going to not only help your organization, but help theirs and help the people they're collectively trying to serve.
Incredible. I think that's a really solid piece of actionable advice. And especially, saying, what can I do to help you to some of these organizations? And holy mackerel, 525 meetings. You are an absolute animal. No wonder you are where you are. That's amazing.
It keeps you busy, but it also it's what gets me excited every morning when I wake up is knowing that I'm going to get a chance to build a new relationship in some way, shape, or form. And a lot of the conversations start out pretty blasé, but eventually, as you start to build that relationship, you find really cool ways to work together. And that's where the magic happens in my eyes. So it takes a lot of time. There's no doubt about that, but it comes through and is impactful in ways that you could never imagine.
Absolutely. And good things take time. I know, Nathan, I wanted to go back to something you said a bit earlier. You chatted about, supporting the next generations and how, in the next 10 years, there's going to be a lot of retirements and such, and building kind of those ladders for people to climb up, and especially younger people. I'm curious, advice for new economic developers, someone who's looking to get into the field. Maybe they're looking to land their first role, or maybe they're looking to get their first internship. What are the three key steps you'd recommend for them? And then also, pending, they're successful and they do get into their first position, what would you recommend for them to be successful in their role?
Well, I would say there's a couple really important things. Number one, get to know others in your field, both that are entering the field like you are, as well as folks that have been around for a while. Finding a good mentor is incredibly impactful. It has been huge in my own career path, but we built a mentorship program specifically because we saw the value in those relationships. It gives you someone that can be a sounding board that is outside your organization, outside of the work you're doing directly, and can give you feedback. And also help you in your own career pathway. So that's one. Find a mentor and engage with others. Two, I would find other organizations, whether it's IEDC, whether it's a state economic development association, whether it's a local organization where you can connect with others that are just coming up in the industry. So at IEDC, when you join as a member, number one, we built a new membership model a couple of years ago to reduce barriers to entry for folks. So we have a new student rate. Essentially, you can become a member of IDC as a student for $25. There's emerging leaders rate so that folks that are just entering the field can get in and have a lower barrier of entry. And when you become a member, we've got an emerging leaders affinity group. So they meet every single month virtually and in person at some of our conferences, where it's just a group of emerging leaders, folks that are 5 years or less in the industry, connecting with one another. In some cases, we're bringing topics or speakers to them. In some cases, it is them facilitating their own conversations or asking questions, how did you address this in your own career? And they're bouncing ideas off one another. And the energy that happens as a result of that group is so inspiring. I love to be with that group because there's always new ideas and they're really collaborating with one another in building out their own opportunities for their career, but also, continuing to help build their organization. So that's number two. So mentor is number one. Number two is find an organization and a group of folks that are kind of in that same career trajectory and pathway with you that you can learn from. And three is be curious. I think that to me, that's the most important characteristic of any economic developer. Be curious, ask questions, find out how people got into their role in their career, especially in economic development where there's not a very specific career pathway. A lot of us fall into it. And so, learning from what others have done, asking about what mistakes they've made so that you can learn from those mistakes without having to make them yourselves. Be curious. Ask people for their time. I think you'll find in the economic development field, almost anyone is willing to spend 15, 20 minutes with you if you ask for it. Now, don't come to that conversation with nothing to talk about, right? Have a couple questions for them and or something that you want to try and achieve or ask about their priorities, as I talked about before. But anyone's willing to have a conversation. And I would say, reach out to me, reach out to our team. We're happy to connect you with others. I'm happy to spend time with folks myself to talk about my own career journey and to see where I can be helpful. In economic development, it is about relationships. And you're going to find as you move through your career that the relationships you build at a conference or within a course are really critical. And then I would have a fourth thing. I know you only asked for three, but the fourth one is investing in your own professional development, whether that's through courses through us, where you're building your own, career trajectory, or whether it's at a local level or at a university or community college or other associations, there's always opportunities to learn. Be a constant and consistent learner. That's going to help you not only build your skills and expertise, but again, it's going to help you build a network as you go through different courses and certification programs.
All fantastic advice, and do appreciate the bonus one as well. I think that's great, and I think all those things lead to being successful in the future. And especially, I cannot underline what you said about being curious and asking questions. I know, back in the day, being a kid in class, asking a ton of questions can get annoying to some other people. But the reality is, hey, that's a good thing. You want to be asking questions and finding out the answers to things and reaching out to people in your network and having those discussions, because those are the big things that you might not learn in a textbook, right? It might say one thing, but in reality, the practice is a lot different, or depending on different variables, it can be a very different situation. So being able to have those questions and to be curious along the way, and that continuous learning and investing in yourself. I believe it was Warren Buffett who said, he said the best investment you could ever make is investing in yourself. And I think that is so true. And I know I've really enjoyed my journey and self-development in the last couple of years, taking a lot of different courses and such. And it feels a little crazy sometimes, especially when you step away from a job that's paying good money to go back to school. And some of your friends go, "What are you doing? The whole point of school is to get a good job." And it's But sometimes it's not that simple. It's about playing the long game and making sure that you've got the knowledge that you need and that you're continuously learning for that investment in your own future.
Absolutely, totally agree.
So I know I've asked you a lot of questions today, Nathan. I've got a couple last quick ones for you, just being cognizant of your time. Is there anything that we didn't talk about today that you think would be of interest to our listeners?
Well, I think the only thing I want to stress is, what I think really makes this work special is the mission orientation and service aspect of it. I think that sometimes gets overlooked or misunderstood. Obviously, every economic developer is trying to help businesses grow and communities thrive as a result. But the ability to give back to your community to see and build out economic opportunity for families and other people in your community is really special. And especially for this generation that's just leaving school right now, I think that's incredibly important to them. I heard a presentation a couple of months back that described this those entering the workforce right now is the Y generation, the WHY. They want to know the why behind the work. And as soon as they understand the why, they will get behind it and work like crazy to make things happen. And so understanding the why behind economic development, your own why, but also the why behind the work itself is really, really important and is what makes this work so much fun and so special because you get to see the results of it every single day in your community.
Very cool. That's the first time I've heard that, the Y generation. I think that's really interesting and has given me a lot to think about. Nathan, we have a closing tradition on the podcast, a mystery question, and that can kind of take the form of a few different things. This one in particular comes from Stephanie Crilly, who is the Executive Director of the Economic Development Council of
I know Stephanie
Ontario.
well, yeah.
Yeah, Stephanie is great, and I reached out to Stephanie and I let her know that I was interviewing you, and she sent me a couple questions, and the one I have picked from her selection is I think it ties in well because you've done a lot of incredible things, and even there was some stuff you mentioned today that I didn't find in my research. So really thankful for you opening up and sharing a lot about that. But what is something you are proud of that you never talk about?
That's a great question. Stephanie always has fantastic questions. Something I'm proud about that I never talk about. Well, I'll say, and I talk about this a lot with my team and with my friends, but I don't talk about it from a professional sense. And that is, I'm incredibly proud, and this may seem an obvious answer, but I'm incredibly proud of who my kids have become. So I've got a daughter who's 18 and a freshman in college, and a son who's 16, a sophomore in high school. And one of the things I learned really early in my own career was I wanted to be able to spend time with them as they were growing up and be at the basketball game or the ballet performance. And so as I came into leadership roles, I made that a point, both for me but also for my teams, to say, hey, this stuff is really important and you've got to make time for it. And most of what I can attribute any of their success to is my wife, and our partnership together has created an opportunity for both of our kids, but also they've made it themselves. They obviously see Lindsay, my wife, and I, and the way that we work and our work ethic, but they're two very different kids, very different personalities, very different things that they're passionate about, but they're both incredibly, not just successful in school, but successful as humans. And it's been incredibly fun to watch their own growth and maturity. I don't talk about it enough because typically I don't get asked personal questions. I get asked about work. But that role as a dad has been for me the most important thing in my life. And watching the two of them grow, watching them struggle and find success has been so rewarding. And so the one thing I would say in that is, as you think about your own career, make sure you prioritize that balance. And I coached basketball for a long time while I was doing this job. And while that was hard, it was also an incredible experience because I got to spend more time with my son. I got to get out of my element from a work perspective and not only, have different challenges, but also see growth in other kids. And watching both my kids, Landon and Sophia, grow and become the people that they are today, it's not a testament to me, it's a testament to them and the work that they've put in, the work they continue to put in. And it's just been incredibly fun to watch them. And so I would just say I'm incredibly proud of who they are. I'm incredibly proud to be their dad. But most importantly, it's been an incredible journey to watch them make their own lives and to build out their own opportunities and be successful in it. And in many ways it's similar to what you do at work. You watch other people grow in their jobs and careers, but obviously there's a very specific connection here. And so I would say anyone who has an opportunity to have that experience, make sure you take the time to just sit back and watch and enjoy it and appreciate it and spend the time with them, because you don't get that time back. And so it may sound like an obvious answer to that question, but I'm most proud of who they are as kids and as, growing adults, and can't wait to see all that's ahead for them.
Beautiful. Be what a beautiful answer. And I think that really shows who you are as a person. And because a lot of folks, obviously, they see you in your position as, president and CEO. But I think that really cuts to the core there and shows at the end of the day what is the most important thing. And I hope people really listen into that. And I can say that Lana and Sophia and Lindsay as well are very lucky to have you in their lives. And I really love how you said, who have who my kids have become. I think that is such an incredible answer. So thank you so much for taking the time to share that with us, but also to share the rest of your time today. Really appreciate it. And thank you so much, Nathan, for joining us on the show.
Of course. Thank you for the opportunity, Mason. And again, to anyone out there, if we can be helpful in any way, please reach out. My email is nohle@iedc.org. Happy to help in any way that I can. Our team is here to be in service of anyone in the economic development field and profession. So, Mason, thank you for the opportunity. Thanks for all that you're doing. And again, let me know where else I can be helpful.
Absolutely. My pleasure. And I'll make sure to link that info in the show notes as well. Thank you for joining us on Hyperlocal. Real stories, real impact, local solutions, and global perspectives. If today sparked an idea, share it with your network and tag us. If you love today's conversation, hit subscribe, leave a review, and share it with that one person who needs to hear it. Thank you so much, and let's keep the momentum going.